of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jessica, can you do the roll call, please?
Lassiter.
Here.
Nemechek.
Here.
Conklin.
Here.
Moody. Absent. Needhammer.
Here.
Quorum present.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion to excuse the absence of Commissioner Moody. Was it that motion? Sure. Is it worth it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. Mike, do you want to explain to the audience about our new technology here?
Certainly. Be glad to. As was previously approved by the City Commission and in an effort to improve our telecommunications abilities, we have our all system set up here in the front of the Commission chambers. It is both a camera and microphone system that is able to basically locate and connect with people. Basically, right now it should be honing in on me as a speaker and provide an image of that. If there are multiple people speaking in the room, it should open up multiple screens to allow them to communicate on that. And people will see the various people speaking. When somebody goes silent after a while, it will basically that one person's screen will close on it automatically. It just stays focused on the people that are communicating at that time. Sometimes there's a bit of a lag to it with regards to shifting the video image, but the audio seems to pick up fairly well. We tried it last night on a very closed system with our Planning Commission members. This is our second one. We got the system last week and they started setting it up, so this is a real preliminary test. We expect that there'll be some bugs with regards to it. We've already noticed that the wireless features on the OWL seem to conflict with our monitors here in the Commission chambers, so that's why we only have the main front screen running for us today. So right now people should be able to see the image of the meeting, and also we're sharing the video with the agenda packet on the screen like it's showing up there right now. So we're recording it. And we'll check and see how this works. We're kind of going back to the Zoom format to get the message out there as well. And we're looking at setting up some other channels, such as YouTube and things of that nature, so people could watch the meeting then, and then also come back to it at a later date. These are all pieces of the puzzle that are in the process right now. So I'm sure there'll be some bugs as we work the system out. We'll look for people's feedback. We are having Jim continue to record unchanged what we've done with Facebook since November. So for some reason, this system isn't working today. People can go back to the usual Facebook page for now. So we're kind of running two systems at the same time, so we've got a backup in case this one fails. So I see Tim is looking to be admitted, so we'll let him in. And we'll go from there.
Okay. So will it be at a future commission meeting where we discuss like Zoom meetings and having public participation through Zoom and set that policy?
Yes, I would assume so. Yes, we want to figure out what all the abilities of the system are and what the legal options that the commission has are as well. Because this is different than when we're operating remotely, as was allowed basically through until January 1st of this year. The City Commission could do remote meetings where people could actually be remote but still participate. That is not a legal option currently, and again, that's part of the pieces that we're getting. So we're transmitting out at this point, so people are welcome to view, but with regards to participating through the process, through the electronic thing, that's a whole different legal matter.
Any questions, Commissioners?
But Mike, was that the only one that was able to log in? Was that something fault from my end?
What I saw, George, was that the meeting for the Planning Commission started at 5:30, and the login attempt I saw from you was after 7 o'clock. So the meeting was over by that point.
Oh, okay.
So there wasn't anything to log into by that time.
Okay.
They completed. So I know Mayor Conklin and Commissioner Nemechek, myself and a couple other people were on that limited test at that time.
Okay. That makes sense.
I got 2 weeks. One link didn't work, but I had time to look at it.
Last night or today?
Last night.
Mr. Mayor, we still need to use our microphone so the owl system picks it up. Is that true? Is that a fair assumption?
The microphones basically help in the room here for people. The owl does not help with that portion of our in-person meetings. One of the things we'll find out is the owl, which normally, if we didn't have the microphone, would be honing in on the person that's speaking. Is the owl just going to be looking at our speakers now, since we're going through the microphone system? That's something we'll discover as we go along.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
If I could just mention, last night at the Planning Commission meeting, they didn't use the microphone system, and the owl was able to track the speakers fairly well. We'll see how it does here. And again, and I'll double check. We should be recording this, so I'll double check to make sure that the recording is, and then we can go back and some of us can look at it afterwards just to kind of recap and see what worked and what didn't work.
Okay, moving on to the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent agenda be removed and placed as a last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. The only item on the consent agenda is approve the February 8th, 2022 regular meeting minutes as presented. Commissioners, do you have any questions? Anyone in the public? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Real quick, Mr. Mayor.
We could get a second, Joe.
I'm sorry.
And then
I'm
going to ask a question. You said yes. What's your question?
No, just a housekeeping thing. On the first page here, there's no date showing the date of this meeting. It says Tuesday, February 2022.
On the agenda?
Yeah.
At the top of the agenda?
Yeah, I thought that might want to be fixed for the next.
Okay, thank you. Sure. Any other comments? Jessica, roll call, please.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Lassiter.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Moving along to citizens' comments on non-agenda items. Is there anyone in the public who has a comment on a non-agenda item? If so, please move to the podium so you have 5 minutes to address the commission. Please state your name and address.
Okay, my name is Pam Andy Crumpler. My address is 607 Grant Street. I was at a commissioner's meeting on January 25th, 2022. I have a comment to make. I don't need a response or anything from the commissioners. I just want to say what I have to say. There was a question asked by two different people. It was the same question, but one question was in one way and the other was just a little bit different. One citizen of Boyne asked who on the commission board actually read the marina proposal. There was no answer. Okay, that's okay. So Barb Young got up and asked the same question, but she said she would like a show of hands from the commissioners who read the marina proposal. Tim, you were the only one that raised your hand. That's okay. The mayor, there was a little discussion back and forth about this being put on a ballot, and we found out some different things. The mayor turned and looked at Barb Young and said, I have a point to make. That was a cheap shot. to ask commissioners if they read the document. Just because I didn't read it or raise my hand doesn't mean I didn't read it. And Barb replied, all I was trying to do was ask a question. I was upset that an elected official would respond to somebody like that. You as mayor and commissioners had the choice, the right, to reply to both questions. And that was okay. And Tim was the only one that did to one of them. But to pull Barb up and tell her that was a cheap shot, that wasn't right. I'm upset with myself that I didn't say anything at the time. I wanted to make sure that what was straight, what you said, that I got straight. I'm so disappointed that I didn't speak up immediately. I thought it was uncalled for. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Sandy Fisher, 526 East Lincoln Street. Also related to the last meeting, there were two agenda items. One was the Marina update, and the other was the attorney's opinion or purpose of being there for informational purposes. In my opinion, those are two separate agenda items and should have been treated as two separate items for public comment and consideration. There's a great deal of new information around the marina itself and the grant application, and there were a lot of questions around that. And I think it deserved singular treatment as any other agenda item. Further, people's time was docked when a staff member was responding to the question. And I'm not sure that that's an equitable situation. So I'm personally objecting to bundling separate agenda items, which squelches community participation. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, moving along. We have correspondence. We have three items under correspondence. We have two emails from Chad Falkowski, and we have an email from Melinda Canfield, principal vehicle leader Patrick McDonald. Mike, is there anything that you would like to say about the latest ones coming down?
Yes. At the last city commission meeting, there were questions, as has been mentioned, with regards to voting on bonds and how different bonds, some were voted on, some were not. So that question was posed to the city's bond counsel, Pat McGow of Miller Canfield. He provided the information that's included in the agenda packet. Neither he nor Jim Murray, our city attorney, were available to attend today's meeting. They're both available either in person or electronically to attend our meeting on March 8th. Which is our next city commission meeting. Based on the interest in that, I thought it was important to get the correspondence from Pat McGow out so the public and the commission could have it, and if there were any follow-up questions or things of that nature, they had an opportunity to review it. Basically, and people can read Mr. McGow's letter for themselves, the main difference that he highlighted between the two is for this facility, it's basically an unlimited tax obligation. So whatever the taxes are that are necessary to be levied to pay for the bond payments on this, the city is automatically able to levy. There is no cap. Currently we're around 2 mils, but if for some reason our taxable values went way down and we had to levy 5 mils or 7 mils or something of that nature, which is almost impossible or very unlikely, the city would have the legal ability to do that. Versus the bond issue, which basically limits, provides a pledge of the city's full faith and credit to serve as a backup. If for some reason, the revenues that the marina doesn't generate aren't sufficient to pay those bonds. So basically, it's a backup position. That backup position does not provide the city the ability to levy beyond its millage caps. So currently, we're at 15.51. We have a little bit of a headroom where we can increase our millage. If for some reason, for this or other purposes, the city commission chose to do so. It doesn't mean that the city would have to increase. I mean, there's a lot of unlikely steps to get to that point, but that's the main difference. The city doesn't necessarily, if there was a shortage in the bond payments, if that whole process goes through, and we were, you know, issued bonds for the marina, and there was a shortage that their revenues didn't cover it, that obligation would fall on the city, and the city would either have to find money in its budget someplace to pay for that, and or has the possibility of increasing its millage rate within the caps that are currently set, but that is not an unlimited cap. Mr. McDowell also pointed out with regards to previous resolutions that were approved by the City Commission and previous notices relative to those resolutions that were issued earlier last year when this issue came up, and those were the openings for putting the matter to a vote of people at that time. So that's a brief summary of the letter. He obviously knows this a lot better than I do. He's our expert on the matter. That's why his letter is hopefully informative. And again, if the commission so desires, we can have Mr. Murray and or Mr. McGow present, either in person or virtually. Mr. Murray, he's right here in Petoskey. Mr. McGow's out in Detroit, so we might have to do one electronically. But with those people are available and tentatively scheduled for our next meeting, if the commission so desires.
Okay, commissioners, do you have any thoughts on that? Would you like Mr. McGow or Mr. Murray to be at our next meeting or an old business night on the marina?
I would, after reviewing the document, I asked Mike to send copies of the notice and the resolution that was passed. He sent that to all of us, I think. But I do have a few, several questions that I have that I think would be appropriate, specifically for Gal, McGow, and Murray.
I think it's pretty clear cut. I don't think we need their presence, but I mean, there's no harm in it, but it's pretty clear cut. But the issue is not really relevant until we get back to the marina as an agenda item. So you're asking if at that point we would want their presence, or are you asking if we want their presence before that as an agenda item?
Before that.
Before that.
Yeah, to clear it up. It's clear, it can be cleared up.
Okay.
As soon as we can do that.
Okay. I think the correspondence makes it pretty clear, but
one example or question that I would have, I guess, just to throw it out there, if it could be answered by this board, would be, does the current commission now have the ability to redraft the resolution that was passed, change the resolution, or would a cost of increase with the structure deem a need for an additional resolution if there's any financial changes? Ironically, we have a $3.9 million bond agenda item due to increase in logistics and costs with inflation due to COVID-19, so we can anticipate that from the marina project as well.
Yeah, I can't answer that question.
So that's probably why we're talking about that.
Okay.
I could answer some of that question with regard to it. I think at least one piece of it, and I don't know if you want to get into it now, or if we'd rather wait until the attorneys are present.
Yeah, I'd like the attorneys to be present, so.
Yeah, the only thing that I would encourage, as we do with any matters, if the commission knows of a question in advance of the meeting, somehow that can be communicated to myself or Jessica to be shared with the attorneys so that they can, when they're here, they can be prepared with regards to it. We saw at our last meeting where we had the city attorney, you know, hit with some questions that he wasn't able to answer on the spot. So if you know of a question in advance and we really want an answer, I would encourage you, again, to get the question to Jessica or myself. We'll share that with the appropriate person, whether it's the attorney in this case or anybody else on other agenda items, to try and make sure that we have an answer for you at the meeting.
So we'll have that as an agenda under old business in our March 8th meeting?
Yes.
All right, moving on, we have the city manager's report.
Okay, as we've already talked about the OWL system, so I don't think I need to go any further into that. Today we've received interest from 3 candidates for our planning department vacancy and 2 for our director of public works. We'll also be interviewing 2 candidates for our police department opening later this week. The contractor for the Rivermouth Pump Station has been indicating that they expect to start work on that project in early April. All the equipment is expected to arrive by the end of April, except for the backup generator, which is not expected to arrive until about mid-November. We should be able to use our existing portable backup generator in the interim as the project moves along. A reminder that the second annual Renewed Smeltania celebration is scheduled to be held this weekend, with a lot of the activities taking place right in the Veterans Park Pavilion. One of the events that is scheduled is a polar plunge that is being sponsored by the Field of Dreams effort as part of their fundraising projects. And we're going to be hearing more about that project in a little bit. Barb Brooks of our staff is planning to take the plunge and is accepting donations to support her and ultimately the Field of Dreams cause. So if you don't want to get chilly yourself but want to help out the project, that might be a way to consider. So I'm taking that option. And if you have any questions on these or other items, please let me know. One other thing I gave you a little update with regard to the Rivermouth Pump Station. I just to let the commission know, and I just got a feedback. I checked out with Bob Kundyke with regards to the status of the gazebo project as well, too. They're still waiting for the materials that are coming from Canada to make it across the border. And that situation apparently has become even more complicated than it was when they did that. So they're still waiting on an arrival for those. So those are the only items I have at this point.
Commissioners, any questions or comments?
My only comment is that I heard a rumor that the chief of police from East Jordan is challenging the chief of police from Boyd City on the plunge. Any truth to that?
You don't just hear about rumors.
All right.
I'm good for it. Let's go.
Anyone else? Commissioners?
No, sir.
Okay. Moving along, and we have our reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. We have the January 2022 financial statement. Are there any questions, commissioners? Comments? All right, moving along to old business, we have none. We can move to new business. Item A is Field of Dreams project overview. So I'm not sure who's going to take the lead here.
John Bush, Al Elm. We're here today to talk about the grant that we submitted through you guys, that you guys have to sign, the city has to sign, for the Charlotte County Commissioner Grant, is that what it's called? I can't remember what it was.
Parks.
Yeah. So we filled that out, and there was some back and forth with Mike on that. We took it to the Park and Recs board, and they approved it and moved it on to you guys. So we're just here to kind of give you some updates, a little bit of updates for what the project is going on now. I know we sent you some pictures. So that's the picture of the overall, when the field is finished. That's what our architect engineer has came up with for the sketch of what it's going to look like once done. the overall footprint of it. Yep, so we're not taking up any more space than what we already have. We are going to remove the old willow trees that are down third baseline, but we are going to be planting some more hardy trees in those places because we still need shade down there for spectators and everything. One of the big things that I've seen is, you know, are we taking up more footprint of the area? Are the buildings going to be bigger? What you see there now is pretty much as tall as we're going. It might be a little bit taller, but not by much. It's going to be a little wider. The concession stand area will be a little bit wider, but for the most part, the footprint's going to stay the same. We did have to move the fence out a little bit just because of how it's going to sit on the property. It's going to run into almost the parking area out here at the end towards City Hall. But it's not much. I don't really want to get into much of the specifics because on that March 8th meeting, we're going to bring the architect and everybody here, engineer, to answer any of the questions for you guys on it. Just because we're getting ready to apply for the Eagle permit, you know, for runoff of the water going into the lake and all that stuff, and we'll need the city help on that because it is still city lands. So, anything else?
Well, that, you know, the good point is, so that meeting on the, what day is that?
8th.
March 8th. March 8th is what we're going to be presenting to you as a city commission, you know, our plan, our formal plan, our desire and need to apply to the Michigan DNR or Eagle to get our first phase started. So before we can begin our first phase, we have to get all of our permits, and including the DNR permits done. And the engineers have all the paperwork, all the detail, and they'll be running that all past the city commission to get that ball rolling, make sure we're all in compliance and we're all in lockstep with you guys. So that'll be at the next meeting.
And we are doing the blood punch this weekend. So all you guys come and jump.
John, do you want to explain to the public about the surface you're going to have out here, the all-weather surface, or is that something you wanted to...
Sure. So the surface is going to be artificial grass. It's not going to be natural grass. And we're doing that for the maintenance reasons. You know, right now it's so hard to get Little League to try to just keep up with the upkeep. I mean, right now behind second base, there's a foot and a half drop behind it. So you get the little kids stepping back, catch a pop fly, break a leg. I don't want to see that. So we decided to go with the artificial turf. There'll be a little bit of maintenance, but the maintenance is going to be able to be kept up a little bit easier. The kids aren't going to be digging holes in the outfield anymore, picking dandelions, you know. So we can kind of fix that stuff.
No more mowing, no more watering, no more filling in the holes in the dirt, no more. It's there, it's ready to play. You go there, you play, you go home, you know, basically.
And it opens the season up. You know, it's going to melt probably by April 1st. You know, you never know up here when we're going to get that 8 inches of snow in April or whatnot. But the snow melts quicker. The field's able to play 2 minutes after it rains. You know, so it is going to have a big drain system underneath it that's draining directly to the lake and to the there's a manhole cover up here, a manhole over here that's going to drain to. But it just makes everything a lot easier. And nowadays, turf isn't like the old school turf. It's not the outdoor carpet that we used to throw out of our camper. Now it's, you know, it's softer than grass, less concussions, less injuries. So it's just like grass.
Hopefully you've seen some of the ad in the news review here recently and some of the social media posts. There's a lot more detail about the actual playing surface there that you can check out too.
So if anybody has a subscription to the Petoskey News Online, there's an article, pretty nice article there about the project.
Does anyone in the public have any questions or comments for Skylar?
Skylar, I call him 112 West Morgan Street. He said runoff. You might have some runoff in there.
No, it's not going to go in the lake. It's going to go in the standard storm sewer system that exists today.
Yep, and you said it was going to go right into this dry area, correct?
No. There's a manhole right outside the fence on the right field line.
Okay.
There's a manhole there where it drains off to.
I was just curious because I know we get some flooding.
No, exactly. We have to raise the field about 2 foot.
That's what we say at the next meeting. It's going to show you, our engineer is going to show you all the storm water hookups, all the municipal hookups, all the electrical hookups. That's all going to be in the next meeting. But nothing's going to be draining into anything. It's all going to be standard storm sewer type connections.
And do you have an estimated time of completion? I know a lot of this is all still.
Phase one is going to kick off in the spring. We hope if we can get our permits. The actual governmental process is going to be the next step we have to get through, the next hurdles we have to get through. Once those governmental processes are taken care of, we have the funding in place to start phase one, which is raising the field high enough so that we're actually almost at water table here, so we can't stay at that level anymore. We have to physically raise the field 2.5 feet approximately to put the turf in, to put the substrate in, the gravel in, the drainage in. So once that's done, then we can install the artificial turf, put fencing up. That's hopefully this year. Get it playing. We can actually play at that point. And then once that's done, we can begin the build-out process of all the buildings while we're playing on the surface.
Awesome.
So we're looking at probably a two and a half year project altogether. Could go faster. We've got a lot of in-kind donations lined up. We've got people that have a lot of tradesmen in the area that do brickwork, blockwork, you know, all the trades type stuff that are willing to step in. But we got to get to that phase. We're getting to that phase. So I think it's going to go pretty quick. Once we get that field turf in, you're going to see those buildings come up pretty nice. And they're all going to be, as you see, you're very aesthetically pleasing. There's going to be a picnic area in the back there, actually, that anybody can use to look at the lake and have lunch down there.
Is there more pictures?
So, yes.
I have all the pictures if you want to start.
Yes.
Yeah, if you sort through these, there's a nice actually pedestrian area behind the concession stand that people can use at all times of the year. You know, the goal is actually to be a multi-use facility, not just baseball, softball, girls, boys, potentially, you know, soccer could use that in the fall to practice small, you know, kids teams. It's even got the potential to hold host concerts potentially during the summertime where you could put people in the stands and you could put a band, you know, a band or a stage up in the outfield.
Yeah, more excited.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that can happen here with this once it's built because it's artificial turf. The reason we didn't really go into detail too much about the building is it's going to be bigger because we're putting bathrooms in it. So there's going to be public bathrooms there for people to use in the park as well, right there. So it's going to be a lot of stuff. It's not, you know, we're trying to make this not just a baseball facility, but multi-purpose in a lot of ways, low maintenance, so you don't have to worry about cutting the grass, mowing the grass, watering the grass, fertilizing the grass, filling the dirt in, all that kind of stuff. Drainage will be there all the time. If it rains, no big deal. You know. Yeah.
Well, thank you for all your hard work so far.
Yeah.
It's looking great.
Do I have
any? Anyone else?
We'll just go through some of the, that's the overview of what the concession and everything should look like. It's about 500 people.
Current seating about 400 people. Yeah. The other part of that too is you know, we had a lot of feedback when people saw the willows going down. Not even pretty happy. Some of it, people realized those trees were actually a hazard. They were very rotted. All those willow trees are on their last leg. When you cut them open, you'll see them this spring. They're a fault potential. A lot of people don't realize that those willows have a lifespan, and they've exceeded their lifespan. But our plan is to absolutely re-landscape the area and make it even nicer than it is today. So we're going to, all of our plans and all of our budgets have the replanting of trees along that edge of the park.
Okay, any other comment from the public? Commissioner, we're going to move to the Charlevoix County Parks Millage application. If you have any direct comment on what John, I don't presume you could do that, or is it involved with the application?
What?
Okay, Mike, who will be taking the lead on this?
I will. So in 2014, Charleroi County voted in a millage to support parks throughout the county with funds collected from this millage. That millage was renewed in 2018. All governmental entities within Charleroi County have the opportunity and are encouraged to apply to have a portion of these funds allocated to specific projects within their jurisdiction. The City of Boyne City submitted applications in each of the previous six years, receiving funding for the Community Pavilion, Avalanche Park, Riverside Park, Peninsula Beach, Veterans Park and Marina, the Boyne City to Boyne Valley Trail, Rotary Park, Old City Park, Boyne Valley Trail, Waterworks Park, and Boyne Forest Trail, totaling well over $100,000. In 2022, the Charleroi County Parks and Millage applications were originally due on February 1st. Staff proposed the submittal of three separate applications that were shown, that are noted in the memo below. The projects were supported and prioritized by our Park and Recreation Commission and approved by the City Commission. Those three items that have been previously approved were the Rotary Park Pickleball Court Fencing and Beaches as priority number one, the Veterans Park Pavilion Seating, that's priority number two, and the Veterans Park Audio System, which was priority three. The county has since extended the application deadline through the end of this month, February 28th, next Monday, to give cities and townships more time to complete the application process. At the February 10th Park and Recreation Board meeting, the Fields of Dreams Committee requested that the city apply for $10,000 towards phase one of the Little League field renovation project. After the Field of Dreams update presentation, the board voted unanimously to recommend moving forward with an additional Charleroi County Parks Millage application, making it the city's number one priority and bumping the other three applications that were previously approved by the City Commission and already submitted down one respective step for a total of four project applications for 2022. Get back to that. No matching or supporting funds are required for the Parks Millage applications. The applications are reviewed and recommended for approval to the Charleroi County Board of Commissioners by an advisory panel. The maximum fund allocation per project is capped at $10,000. It's a recommendation to approve submitting a Charleroi County Parks Millage application funding request in the amount of $10,000 for phase one of the Little League renovation project and adopt the attached resolution supporting the application of funds and authorize the city manager to sign all of the other required documents to secure the funds. So we have that, and we have a draft of their application as well too, and then the resolution that followed that. So I'd be glad to entertain any questions that the commission may have on this, but obviously we have a number of speakers. I saw representatives of the park board here, as well as members of the Field of Dreams group as well.
Thank you, Mike. Is there anyone in the public who has a question or comment? Any other staff comment? Okay, commissioners, we can move to deliberation here. Tom, you want to start?
Sure. I'm in full support. This is improving an asset for Boyne City, and I really thank the committee for stepping up and taking on this project. And you know, our local taxes go to the county, and the county allocates it back through the recreational funds. And you know, I believe that we should get the money back that we put in as a community, and it goes for good causes. And then in that process, other communities get to benefit also. So I'm in full support. It's a good project.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm in full support. I think it's a great opportunity, capturing those taxes that our taxpayers are paying into. community with the county extending that deadline to the 28th.
George?
Yeah, same thing. The only thing I'd like to ask about is there was talk of prioritizing the requests. Could we possibly put this at the top of the...
I think it has been.
It is, yeah.
It has been?
That's a recommendation, right?
Yeah, that's a recommendation.
Yeah, so Rotary Park pickleball courts would move down to priority 2. Veterans Park Pavilion seating would move down to priority 3. Veterans Park Pavilion audio system would move down to priority 4.
Anything else, George?
No, sir.
Okay, I'm in complete support as well, so I entertain a motion to approve the recommendation of the Field of Dreams.
I'll make a recommendation to approve the Field of Dreams project overview and the application for funding.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any other discussion? If not, Jessica, roll call please.
All right, Conklin.
Yes.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Lassiter.
Aye.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, we have the Lost on Lake Street funding request. Consider the recommendation from City Manager Michael Keane to authorize staff request state funding as presented.
Right. Yes, we've been approached by the Michigan Community Capital, the nonprofit organization that's behind the Lost on Lake Street mixed-use residential project here in One City, to help them apply and secure $3.9 million in state funding to cover the project's funding gap. This gap has only become more challenging given the supply chain availability issues and related construction cost increases that have been taking place since the project was originally proposed. Attached, you will find an information sheet regarding the project that was prepared by MCC. MCC has built and is building similar lost projects around the state, including operating projects in Cadillac and Mount Pleasant, and another one that's just getting underway in downtown Grayling. Michigan Community Capital is a leader of these types of projects around the state. The state has previously helped the project obtain a $750,000 grant to prepare the site and remediate previous environmental issues from the Michigan Department of Education, Great Lakes, and Energy. That grant project has been successfully completed, and in addition, the city has approved a 10-year commercial rehabilitation abatement on the property. The funding currently being requested would be an enhancement grant of funds from the state directly for this project and would not involve a city match. As we discussed at our last city commission meeting in reviewing the city's goals, creating new ones and creating new and reasonably priced housing is our number one priority. This project, as proposed, helps us meet that goal. Marilyn Crowley from Michigan Community Capital is here at our meeting to review their project and the need for this funding to help make it a reality. It's my recommendation that the City Commission authorize staff to request the state funding as outlined previously.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Marilyn, would you like to add anything?
Hi everyone. I'm very pleased to be standing in front of you. I was here a few years ago when we originally brought this project forward. And I'm still just as passionate and excited about this project. A little bit of background.
Marilyn, could you just...
Sure.
Al, we're having a hard time hearing the speaker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
You were here a few years ago.
Yeah, so when we brought this project forward, I was very passionate about our goal to bring workforce year-round apartments to this community. And over the past 3 years that we've been working on this project, I've become even more passionate. I myself have just moved to Northern Michigan, and I'm staying in a relative's house because I haven't been able to find housing. And so it's just kind of fortified my passion about this topic. So a little bit of background. At the time we brought the project forward, the project cost about $8 million in hard construction costs, and we're now looking at an $11 million project for the same footprint, so not adding or making it any bigger. We've seen that across our projects, the projects that have started construction before COVID and the ones that are attempting to start construction since COVID. We've just seen a huge volatility in the construction market. We're seeing huge lead times. I mean, even just for things as small as an electrical panel, we had a 39-week lead time to get a 400-amp electrical panel. So our supply chains are broken. We are working with a great group, Midwest Construction, who has been connecting with local trades in the area that can take a project on of this size. I don't think the issue is the companies. Like, the issue is the products and the materials is where we're seeing. And our subcontractors just seem to not have control over their cost at all. And one of my contractors told me this is the worst time it's ever been. He's been in the industry for over 25 years, and he was almost in tears when he gave me this pricing. So we are very committed to this project. We have been starting and finishing workforce housing projects across the state. We recently just started our own property management company because we felt third-party property managers weren't providing the customer service that we were looking for. And this is a building that MCC will never see the full return of an investment. We will hold onto it for my entire career and the career of my follower. So this is a project we are committed to being a member of the community and creating an asset for the community. So the request in front of you is a grant to the state directly. We wouldn't be giving up money to Boyne for some other purpose. This is specifically for the purpose of getting this workforce housing project done to try to overcome these costs. And so you might be asking, well, why don't I get a grant? Because my costs have gone up in my life. And I agree, I wish I could get a grant for myself as well. But I think at the end of the day, this project is still just as important to the community, even with the costs increasing. And so we still want to see it done. And we are not increasing the rental prices at that. I mean, our prices have gone up 30%. We're not increasing our rents by 30%. The purpose is to keep rents at a level that is affordable to workers that live and work in Boyne City. So this project could probably easily be done if it was luxury condos, but it's not. It's apartments that are renting for $800 a month. So please let me know what questions you have. I'm very grateful for the consideration. This grant would make a huge difference to overcoming the challenges of construction. And we are very committed to getting the project done.
Are there any specific questions right now, commissioners, or do you want to move along and we have an opportunity to ask Merrill questions in a minute or two?
I have several questions, but I can wait until I have the public comment section.
Right. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to comment? Steve?
Can I sit down?
Please.
Thank you. I think one of the reasons why we're here today for requesting this additional funding is so important is because it's not just impacting this project, it's impacting
all. Can you identify yourself?
I'm sorry, yeah, Steve Schneller. Just about to do that, this is my intro. But yeah, Steve Schnell, the Charlotte Boyne County Housing Rating Program Director and Boyne City resident. This is impacting so many people right now because the increased construction costs are impacting everybody. So the need for this project is even greater now, even though the costs are greater, because we're seeing every housing project in our communities hit with these additional construction costs. And it's really stifling the growth in our housing supply. In fact, in some communities in our county, we're seeing a net reduction as houses get converted to short-term rentals. We have only one or two new permits for new houses in other communities. I think we have more here, but talking a little bit about the housing needs of this project, and we could talk for hours about all the different housing needs in our communities because they're varied. Some people need to move to smaller houses, housing spaces as they age. Some need larger spaces as their families grow. Some need apartments, some need manufactured homes. We are working to create housing opportunities in all these spaces, and right now we have a company that wants to build 45 quality apartments. If someone is thinking that 45 apartments seems like a lot, do we really need that? I mean, I think it's a great question. To put that in perspective, the 2019 housing market study estimates that Boyne City could absorb 171 new rental units. That's just rental units. We have 50-some new single-family homes that could be absorbed into the market. And that's every year for 5 years, starting in 2019. And we have not hit that mark any of those years. One of the things in my position, people share stories about their housing. You heard Marilyn's story, and that's just one of many. There was a rental home recently that was put on Facebook Marketplace. Within 48 hours, they had over 150 applications, people in line ready to rent that house. One couple, she shared with me her story that she moved to the area. She and her husband had professional jobs, and because they weren't able to find any housing in the area, luckily they had family, and they lived in his parents' basement, essentially. Another couple found a small one-bedroom apartment for rent only during the winter. They're spending $1,300 a month. They had to reach beyond their financial comfort zone. They bought a lot, and then they had a new home constructed on that property. They later found out a lot of the homes that they were bidding on in this area, they were outbid by commercial rentals, vacation rentals, people purchasing them for those purposes. A professional couple recruited from outside the area, the woman almost turned down her job because she couldn't find anything for a couple of months to live in the area. And a retired employee of that firm decided, well, you know, we want to see this company succeed, and so they are renting the basement. There's no locked door between her basement apartment, which is sort of makeshift, and the rest of the house. A downtown business in a nearby community over in the city of Charlevoix, they lasted one summer. They took a franchise idea from Grand Rapids, they brought it up here, and at the end of the summer they shut it down because they couldn't find enough housing for their employees that they needed to bring up for this. So this project provides dignified housing for people who make slightly below average incomes, who fill much needed jobs in our community. It also provides some of those housing units for people with average incomes who also can't find housing. I think it's important here to talk a little bit about those. I think you saw in the packet 80% AMI. What does that really mean as far as income? One-person household, that means $39,600. For a two-person household, it's $45,250. It goes up from there. It depends on the number of people in the household. So it's critical for economic development that we have this housing. We have businesses that are contemplating leaving our area because they can't find people, because those people that they might need to recruit to the area, they can't find housing. So it's easy to look at each solution and say that's not the perfect solution, or that won't solve our problem, so why should we even try? Let's wait for the next project. And I think that's one of the Achilles heels of creating these solutions, is because there's no one big silver bullet that will solve everything. We really need to say yes to just about every housing project that meets our housing goals for our community and, of course, our master plan and land use goals. So I really appreciate you considering the request to the state of Michigan to help out with this project. I think it's much needed, and by our retail businesses, by ourselves who are looking to get housing for people that work for businesses in the area, and just for the seniors that need a different type of living situation. We need that kind of movement in the market. We need that new type of housing, because people need to move to a more appropriate housing, and right now they just can't because nothing's available. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Michelle?
Michelle Portway, 221 Water Street, Boyne City, representing Boyne Housing Solutions. As we all know, housing is our number one priority, number one goal of the city. The supply chain disruptions and cost increases we have seen in the last 2 years have made housing even less available for our residents. We should do whatever we can to assist in efforts to build attainable housing in Boyne. The lack of attainable housing in Boyne is affecting businesses of all sizes, from large employers in our business park to our small downtown businesses, as Steve just enumerated. Michigan Community Capital has a track record of success in other Michigan communities. I've seen their projects, they're excellent. we would like to add, we would like Boyne to be added to that list of successes. This request does not involve any city funds. Please consider endorsing the request for Michigan Community Capital to apply for state funding to help close the gap in funding for the project in Boyne City. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Jane?
Hi, I'm Jane McKenzie with Northern Combs Community Development Corporation, a nonprofit that also does affordable housing, and also a local resident. If you haven't done any construction in the past year, you've done it a couple years ago, you just don't understand the kind of pressures that we're having doing construction. So I fully support the commission supporting MCC and moving forward with this project and getting additional funds. We just completed a huge rehab on a 32-unit project, and we're lucky that we ordered a lot of things ahead of time and spent more for storage to have them just available for when we needed them. But the other things that we needed to get as we moved along also held up our project, so I understand what they're going through. And also I want to say that MCC does the difficult projects. It would be a lot easier to do this as a high-end condo project, but that's not what they're proposing. They're proposing something for the local residents and local businesses, and they do a great job because they've done this in other communities, so I'm glad that they've selected Boyne City to do this project. So I support it.
Anyone else? Sandy, did you have your hand up before? I missed you, I'm sorry.
Hi, Sandy Pritchard, 26 East Lincoln again. MCC does have a great track record, and I'm happy for that. The term affordable housing, or sometimes attainable housing, comes up. And I think of housing and I think in terms of a home. And I think that's the continues to be the American dream. These are, the studios are 400 square feet. The one bedroom is 500. And the two bedroom is?
750.
Each of those have one closet in the bedroom. That's very hard to accommodate, maybe owner's lockers in the basement, but that's very hard to accommodate living as a home. It's about the equivalent of the size of an extended stay at Courtyards. But it is something that we need. I mean, obviously, we need places for people to stay. But given the size of what we're talking about here, I suggest that it's high time that the city look hard and revisit its position on tiny houses. If we're going to call a 500 square foot, I'm going to call it apartment, a home, then we need to be able to consider strongly tiny houses that are on smaller lots that are within this size and actually have, if you look at some of the floor plans, some pretty great amenities, and they've been built in some pretty fabulous ways. So I really think, you know, most of us, you know, envision that, you know, having our own space, our own dirt, our own garden, you know, whatever, however small it may be in a condo. And I really would encourage the city to look hard at revisiting its position on tiny houses in the city limits. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Good afternoon, Boyne City Main Street, the Executive Director. Just want to take one moment here to just highlight for you the need that has been expressed to me in just the few months that I have been acting as the Director for the Main Street Program. From a variety of different downtown business owners, both restaurants and retail stores, there is a dire need for their employees and even for some of the business owners to have access to affordable housing. I know of multiple cases where employees that work at the various stores and restaurants are driving 30, 45 minutes in order to get in here to work, and it puts a great stress and strain on the business owners and finding people to staff their businesses. So this has the potential to impact our economy downtown in a great way. So I just wanted to take a minute to share with you some of the feedback that I've got from our business owners and the people that work in our downtown area, and bring the great products and the great smiles to us on a regular basis. And it may not be the perfect fit, but it definitely is a step in the right direction. And I'm in 100% support of seeing this go through and seeing more opportunities to build over time for our community. So thanks.
Thank you. James Richmond, 729 Lake Park Drive. This project is taking up premium space here in Boyne City, and I think it's a premium product or project. I think if this goes through, when we look back, we're going to all be proud of this project, and I think the people that are using the affordable house option there are going to be proud to go home at night, as opposed to what we may otherwise think, a trailer, a rundown property. I mean, this is going to be premium right here in town. They're not even going to need a car if they don't want one. They could potentially walk to all the businesses here in Boyne City. I think it's an amazing opportunity, and I want to thank everybody that's been involved in this project for a long time. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi, good afternoon. Patrick Patoka. I am the president of the Boyne Area Chamber Board of Directors. On behalf of our members on the Chamber of Commerce, we too would like to voice our support for this project, encourage the city to throw its support for the recent request. It is the biggest challenge as a business operator myself, and as for our members, is staffing. And the number one reason why staffing is so difficult is the lack of affordable housing within our community here. 2 weeks ago at your most recent meeting, I was struck by the Boyne City Goal discussion that you were having and how often housing was a part of several of those goals that it touches. It touches just about everything that we do within the city. And so for that reason, we want to make sure that we ask the commission to consider supporting the request on the end here. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I just have a quick question. I'm Doug at the State Street.
Beautiful
project at the Ballroads.
Could you give your full name, please?
Doug Brubaker.
Thank you.
I just have a question. Beautiful project. A lot of money. What stops somebody from buying it? A hedge fund? Is that protected from that? Can somebody come in and go write a check for $40 million and walk away and make a luxury condo?
If you could address the question to us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll have Marilyn answer it.
Okay, sorry. I know that. What stops a hedge fund equity firm coming in and buying the building? Is there something to protect the people that are going to be there affordably? And it doesn't come in and get swamped and then end up being condos. If there's, I don't know the rules or laws, but I just wonder if there is something that maybe could even be put in there.
Anyone else? Okay. Marilyn, would you mind answering any questions for us, please?
Great question. So we do have a development agreement with the city that 51% of the units will be affordable at 80% AMI for a minimum of 10 years. I also smile a little bit because when we got an appraisal, one reason the project didn't move forward is When we had this building appraised in 2019 for the future project, it only appraised for $2.5 million on a project that at that time cost $8 million hard cost that doesn't consider any of the land or legal or architectural. So we're dealing with a huge disconnect between what the lenders see the value is versus what we see the value is in terms of the long-term community impact. So I guess after year 11, could a hedge fund come and buy up the property? Yes. Is it going to be worth $40 million? No. We don't ever, I mean, we're looking at a project right now that's going to cost about $13 million in total, and we don't ever see this project being worth that much, given its current value. I will say that we are building a building that is not being set up to flip. As one of the speakers mentioned, the apartments are very small, so it's really not set up for a luxury condo. It's not sub-metered in a way that we would easily be able to condo it up. It's being kind of set up as a multifamily. So I guess that's the answer. There is no in perpetuity deed right now.
Mayor, when we find skin, I think we're ready for a commission deliberation. And Jim, you want to start us off?
Sure. I think it's a great solution moving forward on the housing issue that we have, and knowing that we have set that priority here at the city level, because the economics, like the one gentleman mentioned, the economics depend on your housing. Small businesses depend on your housing. A lot of things depend on your housing solutions. I've gotten asked a lot of questions in the last couple of days after this agenda got posted, with this being on the agenda. A lot of the questions that were being asked to me, I feel that those individuals were under the assumption that we were approving this project or not approving this project. So from my understanding, my standpoint, this agenda item has nothing in regards to approving it, not approving this project, and that has been done by the previous commission and done by the planning commission already. So some of the questions that I got asked, I kind of was able to push back and be able to answer some of those. Some of them I am curious about. When we're talking about area medium income, for Boyne City specifically, like Steve pointed out, doing the math, it's $39,600. Now, in Charlevoix County, the area medium income is $44,608. So is that AMI going to be geared towards Boyne City specifically, or how does that AMI look on that agreement with the city?
It's based off of the county AMIs published by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and it's published every year.
And then, you know, splitting the 45 units at 51%, that's 22 and a half apartments that would be at that reduced income for that agreement. With the studio, the one bedroom, two bedroom, is it going to be a mixture of those units, or is it going to be specifically just 51% are going to be primarily be studio apartments that are reduced ones, or?
It'll be a mix.
A mix, okay. You did a good job at your opening, kind of walking us through those, that increase due to COVID-19, that $3.9 million. Just to recap, that was basically due to not labor issues, but directly with material and actually the products obtained in those products.
I also think that subcontractors are so busy that they're just throwing high numbers. We just had an experience on our Mount Pleasant project where, you know, we signed a contract with the Mason, and the Mason got a different job that paid more, and he took half his guys off the job. So we were 3 months behind because the Mason wanted to kind of have his cake and eat it too. So
right.
I think it's just a really challenging time for both reasons, but I think the biggest factor is the volatility in lumber, because this is a wood frame building. Volatility in long lead times in windows. We're seeing 14-week lead times for windows. And volatility of siding, which has gone up a substantial amount.
Okay. And so obviously you stated a few times that you guys are going to be under at the end of this. So does that mean MCC is designated as a non for nonprofit developers?
Correct.
Okay, and so essentially, trying to explain that with some of the questions that I got, from my understanding, just to make sure that my explanation to some of the people reaching out to me was that, with that designation of being a nonprofit developer, essentially you have more wrapped up into this project than what you're going to be able to recuperate, correct?
Yeah, I feel like the simplest way to explain it is that we don't have investors or stakeholders that are looking for a return on investment. So we are trying to make the project pay for itself because we are going to finance as much as we can with a bank. We're looking at a loan for about $3 million because that's the most we can finance. And so, you know, the building has to generate enough income to, we always have full-time leasing managers and maintenance managers to pay for their salaries, taxes, the cost of maintenance, insurance, and then the loan payments. And then at the bottom line of that, we're making less than a 1% return on our investment. So although the project is, we're trying to make it net flow positive, we're really just trying to make the project make enough money to pay our bills and keep our people employed and be able to maintain it to a high standard. Any profit that happens, we typically save it in a bank account for capital improvements. So we know that that roof is only going to last 30 years. Or, you know, we had somebody flood one of our apartments in Cadillac. And so we have a fund that we put the revenue in that we can use to maintain the building. So it's not like there's shareholders with distributions.
Okay, and then last question is kind of like the obvious one. If you guys are not able to obtain this $3.9 million grant, what does that look like for the project going forward?
So we have had early conversations with city staff about applying for the RAP funding with the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. I think that's a good backup option, but it is very competitive. The FAQ that I was on had over 700 people. It's a statewide competitive grant program. So this is a way for us to basically secure the money without competition because we're asking it directly. We still do have the opportunity to apply for RAP. Whether that gets funded or not is really based off of how competitive the other projects are. And then kind of the least desirable option is how we are funding our Solomon Lofts project in Grayling, which is also from the MBDC, and that's the Community Revitalization Program, which is a $70 million pot that is, again, across the whole state that we compete for. So we have kind of these tiers that we will go after to continue to try to fund the project. This is the most secure way, if it's approved, for this project to certainly move forward in the spring. We're very motivated to get our funding together so we can start so that our costs do not continue to escalate. So if you decide to not approve this, then we will move on to kind of the next round of funding. If that isn't approved, we will kind of continue you know, in the hopes that it will receive funding from one of those tiers. But this, to us, is like the most straightforward way to see a line of sight on funding.
Okay. And then the last question someone asked, that I just assumed reading through this memo, that the environmental issues with the contamination have been resolved. Could you just recap on that, that it has been resolved?
Yeah, so 2 years ago, the city applied for a grant through Eagle. And it was approved. We entered into a development agreement. We've done everything that we said we would do in that grant agreement. So we demoed, one of the structures had significant lead and asbestos, and then the site had mercury on it. And so we removed the contaminated soil and filled it with clean fill. So it is now prepped and ready for apartments, whereas before it was significantly contaminated.
So that's great for the community. All right, thanks.
Yes, two quick questions. So just to be clear, there's no cost or risk to Boyne City for this money? No. That's correct. And the 51% of the 45 apartments, the $800, is that for a single bedroom?
Yes.
And what about the two bedroom?
I think we're at $1,200 for a two bedroom. But I need to, I think that's where it is. Sorry, I've looked at a lot of different spreadsheets. I'm sure I should have had that information ready.
Okay. That's
it. Tom?
I'm in full support of this project, as I have been from the beginning. I appreciate all the comments from our local citizens and business people, and the impact has been stated as to how this will affect our community in a positive way. Again, it's addressing our goals, our city goals, that we've had discussion 2 weeks ago. And again, this is taking a delinquent piece of property, as is stated in their handout, and creating vibrant housing opportunities, job opportunities, and eventually back on the tax rolls opportunities. So I commend everyone for going the long haul. This has been, it seems like this was on the docket long before COVID, and then COVID really set us back. But what a great opportunity for Boynton City and our residents. And it's a partnership. We're partnering with Michigan Capital to do whatever it takes to get the project completed. So again, I'm in full support.
Marilyn, I have a couple of questions. What exactly are we applying to or for? Or where does this money come from? What's on our information here? It says enhancement grant request. Is this a state fund or federal? What is this fund?
I don't have much more information than that. I think it's a direct request to the state budget. They have the ability to provide enhancement grants out of their state budget.
So is it approved by the state legislature then, or?
So it's not a competitive grant round.
Okay. Is this the normal way of doing it? I mean,
it's not normal. I would say that most projects go through the MEDC, which we have been pursuing that route for 3 years. So this is a more direct way to get money from the state.
Maybe this is more of a question for Scott, but what's the status of the project? It was approved a couple of years ago. I think that's expired. Like, where's the project stand?
Okay, we need to come back to the planning commission for a review. Basically the same process.
So we would start from the beginning?
Well, ultimately, a lot of the work has already been done, so we're just going to be re-reviewing the plans that have been previously approved. I believe there's some minor changes, but nothing significant.
So we're still looking at the same amount of commercial. Is that a positive?
No. So one strategy that we've shifted since our Cadillac project was kind of the first one that opened in 2020 that we did in this format. And in that project, we did 10,000 square feet of commercial, and we still have 6,000 vacant right now. We're having some great conversations with local businesses, but given how much need there is for housing, we would like to make use of the new zoning change to put housing on the back of the first floor. So that would add about 5 apartments, and then would still keep about 6,000 square feet of commercial. So the front of the building would still be commercial, but facing the parking lot would be more residential. That's the biggest change.
All right. Well, those were my questions. And
I guess two times I was asked in the previous days in regards to the one gentleman's comment made today in regards to like insurances on these not converting over to condominiums. Just for Scott, the zone, like, even say after the tax abatement and everything is done 20 years down the road, the zoning would not allow condominiums. That would be something that would have to go for rezoning, correct?
No, multifamily housing can be dependent on the zoning type. So it can be a one unit building like that with apartments, or it can be specifically each unit owned individually. The zoning doesn't dictate more.
I will say, I mean, I can't speak to if this building gets sold, but my board is controlled by a committee of other nonprofits and low-income communities and nonprofit lenders. And we have a policy in place that we are not allowed to own or operate buildings that have above, they must have 51% at 80% of the area median income across our entire portfolio. So even when this restriction falls off, it is the mandate of my board that we have to continue that.
Okay. Well, commissioners, any other questions or comments? If not, I would entertain a motion to move forward.
I'll make a motion for City Manager Michael King to authorize staff to request the state funding as presented.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
George, is there any other discussion or questions? Okay, Jessica, roll call, please.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Lassiter.
Aye.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everyone. So we can move to item E under new business, cemetery grounds maintenance services. Consider the recommendation from the city clerk treasurer Jessica Grohl to present at the next regular city commission meeting the bids received with the pricing. Jessica?
All right. As you guys may recall, at the November 9th, 2021 regular City Commission meeting, our Director of Public Works, Tim Foss, provided an update on the cemetery grounds bid results. An invitation to bid document was advertised in October of 2021. Bid documents were sent out via email to seven local contractors on October 22nd for a three-year service contract. Sealed bids were due to the city on or before 1 p.m. on November 4th, 2021. An advertised bid was also placed in the Petoskey News Review. However, unfortunately, only one partial bid was received from Dross Landscaping, as they submitted a bid for the fertilization work only. Since the closing of the bid, two companies have submitted pricing bids for the cemetery grounds maintenance. We believe we have a viable recommendation to present, and staff is prepared to make that recommendation. However, we are looking for direction from the commission as to where we want to go. Back in November, we had some time on our hands, but spring is approaching, and we were just kind of looking to see what your guys' advice would be.
Okay, thank you. Mike, is there anything you'd like to add?
I basically see two options at this point. One would be to basically direct staff to basically go out and restart the bidding process and secure bids in the hope that the people that have expressed interest at this point would submit bids. The reason that we're not bringing those numbers and things to you at that point, because we weren't sure of the direction that the city commission wanted to go, and we felt to protect the interest of those that have submitted pricing without knowing, you know, if the commission did want to go out for bids, it would not be equitable or fair for them to basically put their pricing out there and then potentially have the city commission, if you're thinking that's the direction you want to go, opening the bidding process. Obviously, that's an option at any time. When bids are presented, you always have the option to reject the bids and to start the process over, or things of that nature as well, too. So that's why we basically are presenting this to you as a two-step process today, so we can get some direction from the city commission as to which way you wanted to go. Since this agenda item came out, there is the potential that there may be a third bidder that is out there that may have submitted a bid that we're trying to track down the location of on that right now. We don't know what that number is or isn't at this point. We know who that bidder is and can reach out to that person as well, too. So I don't have that at hand. We're trying to locate that. Just became aware that we're potentially missing that this morning. So I guess two options that I think are the most viable options. One, either the commission directs us to restart the bidding process, or that we basically either table this or bring it back to the commission at our March 8th meeting, see if we've been able to locate that potential third bid and bring those three to the commission at that time.
Mike, if I could ask a question, if we were to restart, how long would it take to, before we get a bid opening?
Realistically, I would think it'd probably be the earliest meeting we could come back to would be the second meeting in March. Yeah, and that's going to be pretty close to the, we're getting, unfortunately, as Jessica mentioned, we are starting to get close to the time when grass is going to grow and things of that nature, depending on what the nature brings our way.
And there was discussion about it being done by the city staff, adding a staff member. Do we have numbers to compare that? Or?
Yeah, Tim worked out some numbers on that. That's approximately 80,000, which is significantly higher than some of the other options that we have available. And especially with, that'd really be hard to gear up, and especially with us in the transition of a director of public works, even if that is something that we wanted to consider, I would say this would really be a hard year to try and implement that just with all the other changes we've got going on right now.
All right, so any comment or questions from the public? If not, George, I think, would you like to begin?
Yeah, just, well, there, it was brought to my attention that there was just one gentleman who did want to place a bid on this, who hasn't been included so far. So I guess I'm leaning towards giving him an opportunity to do that. I think that's only fair.
Yeah, and that person has been identified to us, and actually we thought that that was the second bid that we had, but that was made clear to me this morning that that was not the case. So there's no reason that we couldn't reach out to that person if we can't track down their paperwork, because that person doesn't know what the other two bidders have provided. You know, give us their number at that point, and then bring those three to the city commission, whether or not we can find it or not at that time. Those are the only, you know, again, we thought two when we were sending this out, but apparently there's the third one. And fortunately, we know who that person is.
In your memo here, you say we believe we have a viable recommendation to present. So I would think I'd want to move ahead with this. I think it's been out there that we've been looking for bids, we've been looking for people to get rebid. The whole process has been, and deadlines has been pretty public. So I guess I totally understand, George, what you're saying, to be fair to the third person, but on the other hand, to be fair to the other two people that have put in a bid, that they want to get their business going, they want to understand their process, the sooner the better, and if you have a viable recommendation to present, I'm willing to go forward with that.
Thank you.
So timeline is the most sensitivity portion of the whole decision process. Even if we didn't go back and reopen the bids, we're not going to be able to look at the bids until next meeting.
Correct.
Just listening to what you just said about, fortunately, we do know that third individual, getting number from him because he doesn't competitively know the other two bids, so their integrity would still last, their integrity would still be placed there. Would those numbers be brought to us at the next meeting?
If that's the desire of the commission, correct. So that's option one, and the other option would be start all over again and completely rebid the process.
Right, so there wouldn't be any timeline extension on saying contact that third person to have that, because in the memo you do say you have a viable option right now, but you may potentially have a more viable option.
That is a possibility, correct.
So I would say, most logically, the most rational thing to do would look at potentially the third option to see if it is more viable, because it's not extending the timeline.
Okay. Well, I personally think we need to restart the process and just go from the beginning. We'll be behind 2 weeks, but I just don't want any hint of somebody thinking we're doing something inappropriate, and it would just be good, I think, if we could start it over. Personally, so that's how I'm feeling about it. So we have a different point of view here.
Could you ask Mike what his preferred sort of be of those two options?
For the city of that, yeah.
Well, again, Jeff's looking at deals more directly with regards to it. The memo that is before you was assuming that we had the two bids. This is basically, you know, we're going to have to tweak this at the very least to make sure that we can get that third bid that we talked about. That can still be done within the March 8th timeframe. That would give us some wiggle room with regards to time-wise, with regards to it. I understand the mayor's comments with regards to the cleanest process would be just to reject all the bids and start over again with regards to it, but unfortunately, that doesn't give more of a time-sensitive issue. So either one is a viable option. If we go with the second one, it might take a little while for them to start up, and it might... the cemetery might look a little bit rougher than usual at the beginning of the season because of that.
Just a clarification. So, if we let this third person submit a bid, we're not violating the bid documents due by a certain date. In other words, two people have submitted bids, did they meet a deadline?
They were submitted after the bidding had closed. So Tim had continued to reach out to people because we had only received one partial bid by closing.
Right.
So these two that we have were not submitted in time.
So all bids would have been received at the deadline, is my assumption, from what I'm assuming.
For the lawn maintenance portion of it, correct.
Yeah.
So if we accept a third bid within the next 2 weeks, we're not really violating a deadline.
They've both passed the deadline, so all three of them.
A third, or, I mean, the city commission could say, okay, folks, you have until X date before the next meeting to get us, you know, so if there's a fourth or a fifth person that wants to get out there, say, okay, you know, here's the hard deadline, whether it's the end of this week or the first part of next week or something like that. So okay, if there's somebody else that's out there that's been sitting on the fence thinking that they might be going to meet this, you can say, okay, I've got the camera right in front of me, here's a specific date. If you want something to be considered by the city, get it to us by that. That's almost like a soft reopening of the bid, but that's kind of the process that we've done up to this point.
And we've worked hard at recruiting businesses to submit a bid.
Correct.
We've asked and asked over again, over and over again. I kind of like your theory, and maybe this is what you guys are saying too, is you said a soft bid. By the next meeting, we could open the bids and have a recommendation.
Yeah, obviously staff would want to open those prior to the meeting so we could, you know, review anything and make, you know, that check background references, things of that nature, and make a recommendation to the commission rather than just looking at the number.
And that gives the third company an option to be involved, but it does not, what's the word I want, does not violate the other two companies that already have a bid in because they were late too.
It doesn't tip the hand. Nobody has an advantage over the other one, which is the reason that we brought this to you the way that we did. We didn't want to be revealing names or numbers or things of that nature. Just fortunately that it was brought to our attention that there was this other person out there with regards to it. But again, and I think that's kind of where, you know, I don't mean to speak for the mayor, but that's kind of where our process is a little squishy with regards to it. But when the bid deadline came, we received zero bids for the lawn maintenance portion of it.
Okay, that's clarifies in my mind. So therefore, I changed my opinion a little bit, Mr. Mayor. I'd say by the next meeting, after staff has opened the bids, that I think we would be ready, which may disagree with you a little bit. If we opened up the process to start all over again, I don't think we'd get further ahead, and we'd be losing time.
Yeah, it would be the second meeting tomorrow. Yeah. I think that would be perfect, just putting it out there that the all interested parties have their bids submitted by Thursday, March 3rd, so then City Commission on March 8th has the opportunity to review the bids. That impacts the political correct integrity of the process.
Go ahead, Mike.
As the commission's aware, we're now getting the agenda packets out on the Thursday. So we'll be preparing the agenda packets on the 3rd. I would say that's, you know, there isn't that much time between now and then, but I'd probably recommend that if we're going to go down that path, that we give people to, like, you know, no later than noon on the 2nd or something of that nature. That's still going to be a rushed process, but at least we can pull all the materials together in a little bit more orderly manner. We still have to do some follow-up between when the packets go out or something on the 8th. We can still kind of work on that behind the scenes. But I'm thinking the 3rd is it's just going to be super crunch, so I would not recommend that.
Noon on the 2nd is still a week and a half, so.
Yeah.
How would you advertise the fact that the bid is open? How would we contact the...
We can put it out on Facebook, we can put it in the Chamber of Commerce, we can, if we wanted to, we could put it in the Pataskee News Review. We're not required to. You can't, you know, as some other people have commented with regards to it. Majority of people, the newspapers aren't what they used to be, unfortunately, with regards to getting the word out.
But a phone call to that 3rd person,
yes,
would be legal. And
oh yeah,
okay,
just say, hey, we want to confirm, you know, we're trying to track down your paperwork, can you resubmit it, type of thing.
Okay, so we have on the table making the deadline for bids March 2nd, is that what you said, Mike?
Yes, Wednesday, March 2nd.
With the bid opening on March.
It would be on that time, and the bids would be due to, what I proposed was at noon, you know, whether it's 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock, we could schedule a bid opening. I would say noon. We just said schedule a bid opening at that time, and that'd be a public process. We'll open all 3 bids to the public at that time. All the bidders would then know what the bids are.
But it's possible to have a 4th bid too for doing that.
Yeah, 4th, 5th, yes, correct.
Okay. I'm in agreement with that. You okay with that, George?
Yes, sir.
Well, I entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to allow city staff to open bids for cemetery ground maintenance services. Bids to close on March 2nd, Wednesday by noon, and bids to be open on that same day and reviewed on March 8th at the next city commission meeting.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second, that.
George, any other discussion? Roll call, Jessica.
Lassiter.
Aye.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. So we have to go to the order. Anyone want to have a word for the good of the commission?
The only thing I got as far as transportation down to Capitol for the Capcom thing. Is that something we're driving separately? Because I know someone mentioned at one point that carpooling was an option.
Yeah, carpooling is an option, yeah. You might get committed. I'm thinking of going. We need to decide by Friday, correct?
Well, actually, it's until Monday the 28th that we have the early bird discount is available. And usually once we find out who's all going, then we figure out what we're going to do for rides, whether it's one or multiple cars. But we always have tried to carpool as much as possible.
And that's a one day, leave early in the morning, get back late at night.
The conference is a 2 day. What I was recommending was that we go down on March 16th, there and back.
And I would review the agenda, I thought March 16th would be the day of the two, with the topics that are there on the
16th. Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. So if you're interested, Jessica needs to know by Monday.
Okay.
Probably by noon, because we have to fill out the paperwork and submit that to the league.
Well, let's make it Friday at 5.
Well, I'm seriously considering, this conversation is good, just knowing that we would leave very early and get back very late. Carpool. Along with that, what day, I emailed you, but what day is our all day budget? Isn't that right in that same week?
I don't have that right in front of me. Hang on a sec. No, I don't have that in front of me. I looked at that earlier and I don't remember. Well, I want to say it's on the 15th.
Well, me too, so.
I was looking at that when we were talking about the Joint Board and Commission meeting dates as well.
Yeah, so we're working budget all day on the 15th, and then leave at 6 a.m. on the 16th. So So I just wanted to balance my calendar.
I'll send out an email confirming that with regards to the budget schedule. We'll just send out the whole budget schedule back to the commission again so you've all got those dates.
Thank you. That was, you covered my good of the order. I just wanted to get my schedule confirmed.
All right, Joe, did you have any? That's right. So announcements then. The next regular city commission meeting is March 8th at 7 p.m. Motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
And second. Roll call.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Lassiter.
Aye.
All right. Thank you.